Hi, this is Brooke Musterman with Let's Talk Art with Brooke. Today I'm talking with Wim Roof of the IF Art Gallery in Columbia, South Carolina, about the Laura Spong at 90 exhibit, which is ending on February 29th. So you really need to hop on over there ASAP to see it. Hi, Wim. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. I just want to thank you so much for being so flexible today. I had a flat earlier today, and I had to reschedule our interview. And Wim just, he's a busy guy, and he just rolled with it, really just great. And so I'm really, really appreciative to him about it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's really no big deal.
Cool. So I wanted to talk about the Laura Spong exhibit. She's like 90, and she's got this... She's got this great stuff.
Well, actually, she'll be 90 on Saturday. The 20th is her birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday to Laura. That's awesome. And you're having this great great exhibit for her. So
absolutely. We have an exhibition at two venues. One of them is at the IF Art Gallery, which is my gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a second part at Gallery 8808 Sister Studios, which is a studio complex in Columbia around the corner from my gallery, where there's also a big exhibition space.
Mm-hmm.
And Laura has her studio there. So what we have there is an overview of about 100 paintings from the mid-50s through now. And then my gallery, there are another 40 paintings, all from the last year.
Uh-huh. Wow. So she's done a lot of work. She's been pretty busy.
She's very disciplined. She has a routine, and you know, she comes in 5 days a week, even these days. Gets here around 9:30 or 10 o'clock. Works until about 2 or 3 o'clock, and so she paints. You know, that's what she does. So yes, there is a good bit of work. There's not a lot of work left from the mid-50s and 60s and early 70s and all that, or even the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But there was enough left for us to be able to take one gallery space and create a really nice overview that takes you from the mid-50s through the sort of 2007, 2009, and then in the rest of the building. This building has multiple galleries at Sister Studios. There is this work through 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, at my own gallery, at our gallery, there's work from the last year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So how did you guys meet?
We met, I guess, I'm pretty sure we met in her studio during one of those art walks in the Vista District of Columbia, most likely Artista Vista, or maybe the holiday one in November, which is called Vista Lights, and saw her in her studio, saw her work. Her work was typically part of exhibitions at Vista Studios when they had exhibitions of the studio artists there. And so that's where we met. That must have been probably more than 15 years ago.
Wow. And you collaborated with her on some of her stuff, right?
Well, not as an artist. I'm not an artist. But what happened is that I guess it was 2004, 2 years before her 80th birthday, she asked me whether I would help her organize an 80th birthday exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have an art gallery there, or
mm-hmm.
you know, didn't sell art or anything. But you know, by that time I had gotten to know her, and I loved her work, and I loved her.
Right.
So I said absolutely, and so that's the first thing we did together.
Mm-hmm.
That we organized that 80th birthday exhibition, and in the meantime, I had also set up a an art business,
mm-hmm.
And I started to represent her, mm-hmm. and then. In 2006, I opened the gallery, and of course, her work is in the gallery as well.
Mm-hmm. So, is that how you got into the gallery business?
Not specifically through Laura, although that was one of the things. I got into the gallery business sort of, I guess, organically.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be a freelance writer.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of that for mostly European newspapers and magazines.
Cool.
And I was also working on a PhD in American history.
Oh, wow.
I ran out of money to complete that while at the same time starting to do more and more things in the art world here in Columbia. I mean, I've been an art nut all my life, really.
Right. I was going to say you had to have been an art nut.
Oh, absolutely. You know, but I started to do more things here, and they, you know, I mean, it was sort of informal representation of artists in the sense that people would come to our house and they would see art and they would like art and would take the collectors to artist studios, and then these artists would say, well, why don't you keep some stuff in the house and sell it, you know, when they want it, you know, or an artist from the Netherlands whose work I liked and whose work always caught people's eye in our house, and I said to him, why don't you send me some stuff, you know, because people really would like to buy that here, you know, or there's an exchange going on between artists from Columbia, South Carolina, and the city of Kaiserslautern in Germany, which is a sister city to Columbia, and that exchange has been going on for about 12-13 years. And so when these people came to town, the artists from Germany, typically a few of them would stay at our place, and, you know, in the beginning especially, they were involved in doing some big sculptures here in Columbia, and of course they wouldn't fit in the overhead compartment, and when they flew back, so they said to me, well, can we put them in your yard and you can try to sell them, you know. I mean, it was a bunch of that stuff that just sort of built up, and at some stage I thought, you know what, I should just set up an art business.
I did,
and the first few exhibitions, the first two exhibitions, I did at our house. I took our own collection down and hung an exhibition, had a reception, and sold stuff. And then I kind of got wise and decided that, you know, I could use the gallery space at Vista Studios, that place that I just mentioned earlier on, where Laura has her studio.
Right.
That's a place that anybody can rent for exhibitions. And typically it would be artists who did that, but there was no rule that says that an art dealer or a wannabe art dealer couldn't do it. So I started to do exhibitions in 2005 at Vista Studios. I would rent the place for 2 weeks, set up a show, sell art, pull out, and did that like 4 or 5 times. And that really went very well. But the thing is, you cannot do much for the artist you represent in between those shows.
Right.
Because people typically are not that comfortable just coming to a home and look at stuff.
Right.
So when the space where my gallery is now opened up, where the first part of my gallery is, when that opened up, I rented that and started and opened the gallery in November 2006. And in 2013, I expanded. The space next to me came available too, so I broke through the wall and expanded the gallery.
Cool. Now, you're not from around here. Where are you from?
I'm from the Netherlands.
Netherlands? I was gonna ask. Mm-hmm. I thought it might be. So what brought you here?
Kind of a coincidence. I did a master's in journalism at the University of South Carolina. I had been in Northern Ireland in Belfast, where I did a master's in Irish political studies. And one of my fellow students there was from the University of South Carolina Journalism School.
Oh, cool.
I was at the same time, I was also fairly well established freelance writer. So she said, you know, well, with your background in journalism and academia, I'm sure my school would give you a grad assistantship if you wanted to do a master's in journalism. I didn't really need a master's in journalism, but it seemed like a really good travel device, you know.
Right.
If somebody wanted to pay me to go abroad for a year and a half, would I just
hang
up?
Yeah, definitely.
So I came, I did the master's, and worked for a long time as a freelance writer.
Cool. That's awesome. And then you got into the art stuff. That's super cool.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I always was a bit of an art nut, but I got sort of more and more involved in the art scene here, which was also sort of a natural scene for me to gravitate towards. I mean, coming from the Netherlands to the United States is already a bit of a culture shock. Going from the Netherlands to the South.
Definitely.
It's a big culture shock.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of the scenes that I had sort of a natural affinity with, you know, was the art scene.
Right. Yeah, we moved just from New York just to North Carolina, and my parents, I think they suffered extreme culture shock. I can't imagine what coming from the Netherlands is like.
But I mean, as a freelance writer, that was not a bad thing. You know, you want a little culture shock.
Right. Exactly.
That gives you a lot of stuff to write about.
Right. Yeah, I'm a freelance writer as well, and yeah, all the as many experiences as you can get under your belt are just fuel for the fires.
That's right.
So that's awesome. So I'm so inspired by Laura. She's just awesome. I just hope that when I'm 90, that I'm like hopping around like she is. That's.
Yeah, you know, and then we're doing this, you know, audio, but, you know, you should see her. I mean, she's 90. She doesn't look a year older than 89.
Right.
Just kidding. I mean, she looks, I mean, she's very active.
Yeah.
In good shape. And Laura's one of these people who never disappoints, you know, not just as an artist, but also as a human being.
Right.
She's really just one of the coolest chicks you ever meet.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it really is. It's a lot of fun to work with her, and she's had, you know, she's had a remarkable career, because she, you know, a lot of people here think that she didn't really start painting until she retired, until she was in her 60s, which would have been by the late 80s or early 90s or so.
Right.
And the truth is that she didn't really start painting full time until that point, but she had really been quite accomplished prior to that. She went to Vanderbilt. She's from Nashville initially, and she took mm-hmm. an art history class there as an undergrad,
right?
English major, and she took a studio class. You know, she really loved it. She got really inspired by some late 19th, early 20th century. Stuff, you know, Van Gogh or Van Gogh, as we call them, Gauguin, people encountered in the art history classes. Mm-hmm. And she thought she was fascinated by that. So she took a studio class, she audited another one because she couldn't take two because that would be frivolous. And so she sort of started off a bit then, and then she got married, and her husband was from South Carolina, from Columbia, and she moved here and started to take classes in the mid-50s. At the Columbia Museum of Art, where some of the more renowned painters from around here, Gil Patrick, Jay Bard, and G. McWorth, or some others, taught classes. And so she started to take classes there. And quite early on, joined the Columbia Artist Guild. And even in the late 50s, when she had just started, and early 60s, won twice with two other people the annual Artist Guild competition, which also meant then that she was part of a three-person show mm-hmm. At the Columbia Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm.
And so she worked, you know, sort of mid-50s to mid-60s with some regularity. You know, she had found a spot in the house where she could paint. She was raising six kids at the same time.
Wow.
But she tried to carve out some time to make art.
Yeah.
And from that period, you can see that you know, they are remarkably mature paintings for somebody who had really just started.
Right.
Not that long ago.
Right.
And then sort of from the mid-60s onwards, you know, I think the production kind of became, the production decreased a little bit. She got, you know, her kids were getting older in their teens. She had to be more involved with them. You know, take them to summer camps, be a scout, a den mother for the scouts, and things of that nature, and so her production became a little more sporadic.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 70s, then she sort of started to pick up again. She was on some exhibitions again. She had started up again. But then in 73, in 73, her husband died.
Aww.
And so now she had to also take a full-time job to sort of provide for the kids that were still at home. And so for 10 years, she walked at the Columbia Parks and Recreation Department as a sort of art teacher, arts and crafts teacher.
Uh-huh.
She did that, yeah, she did that until sort of 83 or 84.
Uh-huh.
Then gave up that job. Her kids were out of the house by then.
Mm-hmm.
And had a few sort of more temporary jobs, none of which she liked, none of which she thought she was very good at. Nothing in art. No, I mean it was more selling, you know, selling paint, you know, just regular paint, house paint, or selling children's clothing or things of that nature.
Right.
One of them was actually illustrating a few children's books, so that was closer to home, I guess.
Right.
But then, sort of by the mid '80s, started to take classes again at the Columbia Museum of Art. And at some stage just decided that, well, you know, she didn't really like those jobs. She was in her 60s now. She decided that if she was going to be poor, mm-hmm. you might as well be poor doing what you really wanted to do.
Exactly.
Being an artist. Mm-hmm. Except that she would never call herself an artist at that point. She would always just refer to herself as a painter.
Right.
But so by the late 80s, she sort of had gotten into it on a more full-time level, if you like. And then in early 91, she took a studio at Vista Studios, that complex where part of the show is and where her studio is now. That was a new studio complex, and there were like a dozen artists there. She rented a studio there, and all of a sudden she found herself sort of in one of the hubs of the Columbia Arts. There was a lot of camaraderie, you know, there were a lot of people there for whom she could get advice, you know, on technical matters, anywhere from stretching a canvas to using liquid, you know, you name it. I mean, and it was sort of a good environment for her to be painting. And then she set into her routine right then. I mean, she would come in here 9:30, 10 o'clock, she would paint for 5 or 6 hours, and then she would go home again. You know, she would have her instant coffee, she would have her lunch, you know, all of that. And she's been doing that ever since, you know, since the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sort of was in that hub of art activity, which meant that she got invited to group exhibitions.
Right.
She was invited to sort of artist groups who showed together, that she became, you know, aware of all kinds of art competitions and exhibitions that you could enter as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And so she really became an active member of the Columbia art scene, and somebody who also put a lot of work into making Vista Studios and its gallery, which is called Gallery 8088,
mm-hmm.
at Vista Studios, making that really sort of one of the sort of buzzing places in the Columbia arts. And so it really kind of grew from that, and the constant painting, the sort of diligence with which she worked, you know, never waiting for inspiration, as she said, because if you do that, you get nothing done. You just
right.
have to put in the work,
right?
And get results. Really, you can see also in the exhibition, you can see how her work developed. I think you can see that when she started up more or less again full time after 2 decades of sort of a more haphazard production, you can see that she's sort of trying to find her way into her paintings, you know, and that she's sort of growing toward what really become her mature style, you know, which everybody knows her from now.
Right.
And that has just been a really nice process. And one of the nice things about this exhibition is that you can see that process.
Right.
And that you think it's a lot of the work from the last 10, 15 years, and of course from the last year.
Right.
That she became quite successful in that she, you know, was in a lot of exhibitions. Financially, you know, commercially, it wasn't really that she was making that much money off.
She wasn't making the big bucks.
No, she wasn't. But her 80th birthday, well, you know, nobody in the arts really on a sort of local of regional level makes the big bucks. But what happened with her 80th birthday show, though, is that it sort of seemed to focus people's minds. And everybody who had always thought, okay, you know, I really need to buy a Laura's farm, seemed to be coming out of the woodworks and did so. And so that
right.
that exhibition was wildly successful also in terms of sales. I mean, in that one show, she sold twice as much than she had ever done in her best year.
Oh, wow.
So that really went through the roof, and it really kind of made a splash. And the whole year, there were some exhibitions in other galleries and places. Sales kept up, and she sort of sold, you know, 4 or 5 times as much that year than she had ever done
mm-hmm.
in a year prior to that. And ever since that sort of recognition, both critically and commercially, has sort of sustained itself quite well. I mean, all of a sudden museums came looking. The Columbia, the South Carolina State Museum bought an old piece and a new piece. The Greenville County Museum of Art in Greenville, South Carolina, bought a nice piece, both an old one and a new one.
Mm-hmm.
The South Carolina State Art Collection, which is different from the State Museum, they bought an old piece and a new painting. And so she also started to get that kind of institutional recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really, it's been a wonderful ride. I mean,
right.
you know, I was just joking with her a few minutes ago before the interview. Said, yeah, so, you know, at least you didn't have to die sort of to get that recognition.
Right,
you know?
right. Yeah, yeah. Well, I was looking at her paintings, and honestly, I'm really enchanted with them. They immediately pique your interest, and you may not know the immediate inspiration for them, but you want to know more, and you know there's a story behind them. So what kind of stuff
inspired you? Well, it really is. She really is a very good painter. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the other things that 80th birthday show did is, you know, there were 70 paintings in that show from the previous 10 years.
Wow.
And so, I mean, I think it really gave people a good sense of how good she is.
Yeah.
And the variety of her work, but also the consistency within that variety. Mm-hmm. You know, because there's nothing like having an extensive solo exhibition where work hangs among its own, right, sort of get a good sense of that. And so while a lot of people had always liked her work, and everybody certainly loves her personally, mm-hmm, there had always still been a bit of that sort of little old lady in the back of just the studios.
Right, center. Yeah.
and I think that went really pretty much out the door, out the window.
I'm sure.
I mean, that show, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, and people really were sort of like, wow, you know, this woman is good.
Yeah.
You know? And that really helped. I mean, and over the last 10 years, I mean, she really has developed a following. I mean, there are people coming from all over the place, and they want to come and meet Horace Holm, you know, and talk to her.
Right,
right. They all want to see her paint, which she's not interested in, you know. But then the paintings itself, yeah, I mean, there are stories in a sense that a lot of them sort of, I mean, you know, they are abstract paintings, of course, non-objective paintings. But they are very much influenced by moods, by time of the year, you know, by things that happen and that preoccupy her, whether it's books she's reading or music she's listening to or world events or national events. I mean, whatever sort of manages to get on her radar and into her brain and into her heart and soul, you know, whatever preoccupies her sort of gets translated into these paintings.
Yeah.
And you know, it creates the mood of the paintings, probably influences the palette, you know, the sort of aggressiveness or softness of the mark making.
Right.
All of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they are spectacular paintings.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much, Wim. I really appreciate you being here for talking to me and fitting me into your busy schedule. I know that, and working with my randomness and my just.
That's all right. I hope the tire got fixed. And I hope that your listeners can come to Columbia. I mean, the show is up until the 29th.
Yes, yes, definitely.
So I don't think they'll make it. You know, it's worth their while.
There's
a nice exhibition catalog, 28 pages. That's free, so people can pick that up.
Cool.
Yes.
Awesome. And we're going to put some links on the website once we get it up. And we'll put some links to some of her work and some links to the gallery, to the IF Art Gallery. So thank you so much, Wim. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, okay.